I hope Colon gets a move on with it. Vimes stopped. He had to know. How, he said. What could you do to a cloud? The Earl sentenced it to be stoned to death, said Carrot. Apparently 31 people were killed. He pulled out his notebook and glared at the dragon. Can it hear us, do you think? He said.
I suppose so.
Well then, Carrot cleared his throat and turned back to the stunned reptile. It is my duty to warn you that you are to be reported for consideration of prosecution on some or all of the following counts, to wit, 1, I, that on or about the 18th groon last, in a place known as Sweetheart Lane, the Shades, you did unlawfully vent flame in a manner likely to cause grievous bodily harm, in contravention of Clause 7 of the Industrial Processes Act 1508, and that, 1, II, that on or about 18th groon last, in a place known as Sweetheart Lane, the Shades, you caused or did cause to cause the death of 6 persons unknown. Vimes wondered how long the rubble would hold the creature down. Several weeks would be necessary if the length of the charge sheet was anything to go by. The crowd went silent. Even Sybil Ramkin was standing in astonishment. "What's the matter?" said Vimes to the upturned faces. "Haven't you ever seen a dragon being arrested before?" 16(3), II, on the night of Groon 24th last, you did flame, or cause to flame, those premises known as the Old Watch House, Ankh Morpork, valued at $200, and that, 16(3), III, on the night of Groon 24th last, upon being apprehended by an officer of the watch in the execution of his duty.
I think we should hurry up, whispered Vimes. It's getting rather restive. Is all this necessary?
Well, I believe one can summarise, said Carrot. In exceptional circumstances, according to Breg's rules for... It may come as a surprise, but these are exceptional circumstances, Carrot, said Vimes, and they're going to be really astonishingly exceptional if Colon doesn't hurry up with that rope.
More rubble moved as the dragon strained to get up. There was a thump as a heavy beam was shouldered aside. The crowd began to run for it. It was at this point that Errol came back over the rooftops in a series of minor explosions, leaving a trail of smoke rings. Dipping low, he buzzed the crowd and sent the front rank stumbling backwards. He was also wailing like a foghorn. Vimes grabbed Carrot and stumbled down the heap as the king started to scrabble desperately to get free.
"He's come back for the kill," he shouted. "It probably took him all this time just to slow down."
Now Errol was hovering over the fallen dragon and hooting shrilly enough to bust bottles. The great dragon stuck its head up in a cascade of plaster dust. It opened its mouth, but instead of the lance of white fire that Vimes tensed himself to expect, it merely made a noise like a kitten. Admittedly, a kitten shouting into a tin bath at the bottom of a cave, but still a kitten. Broken spars fell aside when the huge creature got unsteadily to its feet. The great wings opened, showering the surrounding streets with dust and bits of thatch. Some of it clanged off the helmet of Sergeant Colon, hurrying back with what looked like a small washing line coiled over his arm.
"You're letting it get up!" Vimes shouted, pushing the sergeant to safety. "You're not supposed to let it get up, Errol. Don't let it get up!"
Lady Ramkin frowned.
"That's not right," she said. "They never usually fight like that. The winner usually kills the loser."
"Right on!" shouted Nobby.
"And then half the time he explodes with the excitement in any case."
"Look, it's me!"
Vimes yelled, as Errol hovered unconcernedly over the scene.
"I bought you the fluffy ball, the one with the bell in it. You can't do this to us!"
"No, wait a minute," said Lady Ramkin, laying a hand on his arm. "I'm not sure we haven't got hold of the wrong end of the stick here."
The great dragon leapt into the air and brought its wings down with a whump that flattened a few more buildings. The huge head swung around, the bleary eyes caught sight of Vimes. There seemed to be some thought going on inside them. Errol arced across the sky and hovered protectively in front of the captain, facing the thing down. For a moment it looked as though he might be turned into a small flying charcoal biscuit, and then the dragon lowered its gaze in a slightly embarrassed way and started to rise. It climbed in a wide spiral, gathering speed as it did so. Errol went with it, orbiting the huge body like a tug around a liner.
It's as though... "He's fussing over it," said Vimes. "Add up, the bastard!"
shouted Nobby enthusiastically.
"Total, Nobby," said Colon. "You mean total!"
Vimes felt Lady Ramkin's gaze on the back of his neck. He looked at her expression.
Realization dawned. "Oh," he said. Lady Ramkin nodded.
"Really?"
said Vimes.
"Yes," she said. "I really ought to have thought of it before. It was such a hot flame, of course, and they're always so much more territorial than the males."
"Why don't you fight the bastard?"
shouted Nobby at the dwindling dragons.
"Bitch, Nobby," said Vimes quietly. "Not bastard, bitch."
"Why don't you fight... what?"
"It's a member of the female gender," explained Lady Ramkin.
"What?"
"We meant that if you tried your favourite kick, Nobby, it wouldn't work," said Vimes.
"It's a girl," translated Lady Ramkin.
"But it's sodding enormous," said Nobby.
Vimes coughed urgently. Nobby's rodent eyes slid sideways to Sybil Ramkin, who blushed like a sunset.
"A fine figure of a dragon, I mean," he said quickly. "Wide, egg-bearing hips,"
said Sergeant Colon anxiously.
"Statue skew,"
Nobby added fervently.
"Shut up," said Vimes. He brushed the dust off the remains of his uniform, adjusted the hang of his breastplate, and set his helmet on squarely. He patted it firmly. This wasn't where it ended, he knew that. This was where it all got started.
"You men, come with me. Come on, hurry, while everyone's still watching them," he added.
"But what about the king?" said Carrot. Or queen, or whatever it is now." Vimes stared at the rapidly shrinking shapes.
"I really don't know," he said. "That's up to Errol, I suppose. We've got other things to do."
Colon saluted, still fighting for breath.
"Where are we going, sir?" he managed.
"To the palace. Any of you still got a sword?"
"You can use mine, Captain," said Carrot. He handed it over.
"Right," said Vimes quietly. He glared at them. "Let's go."
The rank trailed behind Vimes through the stricken streets. He started to walk faster. The rank started to trot to keep up. Vimes began to trot to keep ahead. The rank broke into a canter. Then, as if on an unspoken word of command, they broke into a run, then into a gallop. People scurried away as they rattled past. Carrot's enormous sandals hammered on the cobbles. Sparks flew up from the scads of Nobby's boots. Colon ran quietly for such a fat man, as fat men often do, face locked in a scowl of concentration. They pounded along the street of cunning artificers, turned into Hog's Back Alley, emerged into the street of small gods, and thundered towards the palace. Vimes kept barely in the lead, mind currently empty of everything except the need to run and run. At least nearly everything. But his head buzzed and resonated manically with those of all city guards everywhere, all pavement-pounding meatheads in the multiverse, who had ever, just occasionally, tried to do what was right. Far ahead of them, a handful of palace guards drew their swords, took a second look, thought better of it, darted back inside the wall, and started to close the gates. They clanged together as Vimes arrived. He hesitated, panting for breath, and looked at the massive things. The ones that the dragon had burned had been replaced by gates even more forbidding. From behind them came the sound of bolts sliding back. This was no time for half measures. He was a captain, goddammit. An officer. Things like this didn't present a problem for an officer. Officers had a tried and tested way of solving problems like this. It was called a sergeant.
"Sergeant Colon," he snapped, his mind still buzzing with universal policemanhood. "Shoot the lock off."
The sergeant hesitated.
"What, sir? With a bow and arrow, sir?"
I mean, open these gates."
"Sir,"
Colon saluted. He glared at the gates for a moment.
"Right," he barked. "Lance Constable Carrot, one stepper forward, take."
"Lance Constable Carrot,
in a your own time, open these gates."
"Yes, sir."
Carrot stepped forward, saluted, folded an enormous hand into a fist, and rapped gently on the woodwork.
"Open up," he said, "in the name of the law."
There was some whispering on the other side of the gates, and eventually a small hatch halfway up the door slid open a fraction, and a voice said,
"Why?"
"Because if you don't, it will be impeding an officer of the watch in the execution of his duty, which is punishable by a fine of not less than $30, 1 month's imprisonment, or being remanded in custody for social inquiry reports, and half an hour with a red-hot poker," said Carrot. There was some more muffled whispering, the sound of bolts being drawn, and then the gates opened about halfway. There was no one visible on the other side. Vimes put a finger to his lips. He motioned Carrot towards one gate and dragged Nobby and Colon to the other.
"Push,"
he whispered. They pushed hard. There was a sudden eruption of pained cursing from behind the woodwork.
"Run!" shouted Colon.
"No!" shouted Vimes. He walked around the gate. Four semi-crushed palace guards glowered at him.
"No," he said. "No more running. I want these men arrested."
"You wouldn't dare," said one of the men.
Vimes peered at him.
"Clarence, isn't it?" he said. "With a C. Well, Clarence with a C, watch my lips. Either you can be charged with aiding and abetting, or,"
he leaned closer and glanced meaningfully at Carrot,
"with an axe."
"Swivel on that one, doggy bag,"
added Nobby, jumping from one foot to the other in vicious excitement. Clarence's little piggy eyes glared at the looming bulk that was Carrot, and then at Vimes's face. There was absolutely no mercy there. He appeared to reach a reluctant decision.
"Jolly good," said Vimes. "Lock them in the gatehouse, sergeant."
Colon drew his bow and squared his shoulders.
"You heard the man," he rasped. "One false move and you're...
He took a desperate stab at it.
"Your home economics!"
"Yeah, slam 'em up in the banger!" shouted Nobby.
If Worms could turn, Nobby was revolving at generating speeds.
"Doucheballs!" he sneered at their retreating backs.
"Aiding and abetting what, Captain?" said Carrot, as the weaponless guards trooped away. "You have to aid and abet something."
"I think in this case it will just be generalized abetting," said Vimes. "Persistent and reckless abetment."
"Yeah," said Nobby. "Can't stand abettors, slime breaths."
Colon handed Captain Vimes the guardhouse key.
"It's not very secure in there, Captain," he said. "They'll be able to break out eventually."
"I hope so," said Vimes, "because the very first drain we come to, you're going to drop the key down it.
Everyone here? Right, follow me."
Lupine Once scurried along the ruined corridors of the palace, the summoning of dragons under one arm, the glittering royal sword grasped uncertainly in one hand. He halted, panting, in a doorway. Not a lot of his mind was currently in a state sane enough to have proper thoughts, but the small part that was still in business kept insisting that it couldn't have seen what it had seen or heard what it had heard. Someone was following him, and he'd seen Vetinari walking through the palace. He knew the man was securely put away. The lock was completely unpickable. He remembered the patrician being absolutely insistent that it'd be an unpickable lock when it was installed. There was movement in the shadows at the end of the passage. Once gibbered a bit, fumbled with the door handle beside him, darted in, slammed the door, and leaned against it, fighting for breath. He opened his eyes. He was in the old private audience room. The patrician was sitting in his old seat, one leg crossed on the other, watching him with mild interest.
"Ah!
Once," he said. Once jumped, scrabbled at the door handle, leapt into the corridor and ran for it until he reached the main staircase, rising now through the ruins of the central palace like a forlorn corkscrew. Stairs, height, high ground, defence. He ran up them three at a time. All he needed was a few minutes of peace, then he'd show them. The upper floors were more full of shadows. What they were short on was structural strength. Pillars and walls had been torn out by the dragon as it built its cave. Rooms gaped pathetically on the edge of the abyss. Dangling shreds of wall hanging and carpet flapped in the wind from the smashed windows. The floor sprang and wobbled like a trampoline as Once scurried across it. He struggled to the nearest door.
"That was commendably fast," said the patrician.
Once slammed the door in his face and ran squeaking down a corridor. Sanity took a brief hold. He paused by a statue. There was no sound, no hurrying footsteps, no whir of hidden doors. He gave the statue a suspicious look and prodded it with a sword. When it failed to move, he opened the nearest door and slammed it behind him, found a chair and wedged it under the handle. This was one of the upper staterooms, bare now of most of its furnishing, and lacking its fourth wall. Where it should have been was just the gulf of the cavern. The patrician stepped out of the shadows.
"Now you've got it out of your system," he said.
Once spun around, sword raised.
"You don't really exist,"
he said.
"You're a ghost or something."
"I believe this is not the case," said the patrician.
"You can't stop me. I've got some magic stuff left. I've got the book."
Once took a brown leather bag out of his pocket.
"I'll bring back another one, you'll see."
"I urge you not to," said Lord Vetinari mildly.
Oh, you think you're so clever, so in control, so suave, just because I've got a sword and you haven't.
Well, I've got more than that, I'll have you know, said Once triumphantly.
Yes, I've got the palace guards on my side. They follow me, not you. No one likes you, you know. No one ever liked you.
He swung the sword so that its needle point was a foot from the patrician's thin chest.
So it's back to the cells for you, he said, and this time I'll make sure you stay there. Guards! Guards!
There was a clatter of running feet outside. The door rattled, the chair shook. There was a moment's silence, and then door and chair erupted in splinters.
Take him away! Screamed Once. Fetch more scorpions! Put him in... You're not the...
Put the sword down, said Vimes, while behind him Carrot picked bits of door out of his fist.
Yeah, said Nobby, peering around the captain. Up against the wall and spread 'em, Mother Breath.
Eh? What's he supposed to spread? Whispered Sergeant Colon anxiously.
Nobby shrugged. Dunno, he said. Everything, I reckon. Safest way.
Once stared at the rank in disbelief.
Ah, Vimes, said the patrician. You will...
Shut up, said Vimes calmly. Lance Constable Carrot?
Sir?
Read the prisoner his rights.
Yes, sir.
Carrot produced his notebook, licked his thumb, flicked through the pages.
Lupine Once, he said. A.K.A. Lupin Squiggle Secky P.P.
What?
Said Once. Currently domiciled in the domicile known as the Palace Ankh-Morpork. It is my duty to inform you that you have been arrested, and will be charged with... Carrot gave Vimes an agonized look. A number of offences of murder by means of a blunt instrument, to wit, a dragon, and many further offences of generalized abetting, to be more specifically ascertained later. You have the right to remain silent, you have the right not to be summarily thrown into a piranha tank, you have the right to trial by ordeal, you have the...
This is madness, said the patrician calmly. I thought I told you to shut up, snapped Vimes, spinning around and shaking a finger under the patrician's nose.
Tell me, Sarge, whispered Nobby, do you think we're going to like it in the scorpion pit?
Say anything, but anything you do say will be written down, here in my notebook, and, maybe used in evidence.
Carrot's voice trailed into silence.
"Well, if this pantomime gives you any pleasure, Vimes," said the patrician eventually, "take him down to the cells. I'll deal with him in the morning."
Once made no signal. There was no scream or cry. He just rushed at the patrician, sword raised. Options flickered across Vimes's mind. In the lead came the suggestion that standing back would be a good plan. Let Once do it, disarm him afterwards. Let the city clean itself up. Yes, good plan. And it was therefore a total mystery to him why he chose to dart forward, bringing Carrot's sword up in a half-baked attempt at blocking the stroke. Perhaps it was something to do with doing it by the book. There was a clang, not a particularly loud one. He felt something bright and silver whirl past his ear and strike the wall. Once his mouth fell open, he dropped the remnant of his sword and backed away, clutching the summoning.
"You'll be sorry," he hissed. "You'll all be very sorry."
He started to mumble under his breath. Vimes felt himself trembling. He was pretty certain he knew what had zinged past his head, and the mere thought was making his hands sweat. He'd come to the palace ready to kill. And there'd been this minute, just this minute, when for once the world had seemed to be operating properly, and he was in charge of it. And now, all he wanted was a drink, and a nice week's sleep.
"Oh, give up," he said. "Are you going to come quietly?"
The mumbling went on. The air began to feel hot and dry. Vimes shrugged.
"That's it, then," he said and turned away. "Throw the book at him, Carrot."
"Right, sir."
Vimes remembered too late. Dwarfs have trouble with metaphors. They also have a very good aim. The laws and ordinances of Ankh and Morpork caught the secretary on the forehead. He blinked, staggered, and stepped backwards. It was the longest step he ever took. For one thing, it lasted the rest of his life. After several seconds, they heard him hit, five stories below. After several more seconds, their faces appeared over the edge of the ravaged floor.
"What a way to go," said Sergeant Colon. "That's a fact," said Nobby, reaching up to his ear for a dog end. "Killed by a what's the name? A metaphor."
"Dunno," said Nobby. "Looks like the ground to me. Got a light, Sarge?"
"That was right, wasn't it, sir?" said Carrot anxiously. "You said to,
"Yes, yes," said Vimes. "Don't worry."
He reached down with a shaking hand, picked up the bag once had been holding, and tipped out a pile of stones. Everyone had a hole in it. Why, he thought. A metallic noise behind him made him look around. The patrician was holding the remains of the royal sword. As the captain watched, the man wrenched the other half of the sword out of the far wall. It was a clean break.
"Captain Vimes," he said.
"Sir?"
"That sword, if you please."
Vimes handed it over. He couldn't right now think of anything else to do. He was probably due for a scorpion pit of his very own, as it was. Lord Vetinari examined the rusty blade carefully.
"How long have you had this, Captain?" he said mildly.
"Isn't mine, sir. Belongs to Lance Constable Carrot, sir."
"Lance?"
"Me, sir, your graciousness," said Carrot, saluting.
"Ah."
The patrician turned the blade over and over slowly, staring at it as if fascinated. Vimes felt the air thicken, as though history was clustering around this point. But for the life of him, he couldn't think why. This was one of those points where the trousers of time bifurcated themselves, and if you weren't careful, you'd go down the wrong leg. Once arose in a world of shades, icy confusion pouring into his mind. But all he could think of at the moment was the tall, cowled figure standing over him.
"I thought you were all dead," he mumbled.
It was strangely quiet, and the colours around him seemed washed out, muted. Something was very wrong.
"Is that you, Brother Doorkeeper?" he ventured.
The figure reached out.
"Metaphorically," it said.
And the patrician handed the sword to Carrot.
"Very well done, young man," he said. "Captain Vimes, I suggest you give your men the rest of the day off."
"Thank you, sir," said Vimes. "Okay, lads, you heard his lordship."
"But not you, Captain.
We must have a little talk."
"Yes, sir," said Vimes, innocently.
The rank scurried out, giving Vimes sympathetic and sorrowful glances. The patrician walked to the edge of the floor and looked down.
"Poor wants," he said.
"Yes, sir."
Vimes stared at the wall.
"I would have preferred him alive, you know."
"Sir?"
"Misguided, yes, but a useful man. His head could have been of further use to me."
"Yes, sir. The rest, of course, we could have thrown away."
"Yes, sir." "That was a joke, Vimes."
"Yes, sir."
"The chap never grasped the idea of secret passages, mind you."
"No, sir."
"That young fellow, Carrot, you called him?"
"Yes, sir."
"Keen fellow. Likes it in the watch?"
"Yes, sir. Right at home, sir."
"You saved my life."
"Sir?"
"Come with me."
He stalked away through the ruined palace, Vimes trailing behind, until he reached the oblong office. It was quite tidy. It had escaped most of the devastation with nothing more than a layer of dust. The patrician sat down, and suddenly it was as if he'd never left. Vimes wondered if he ever had. He picked up a sheaf of papers and brushed the plaster off them.
"Sad," he said. "Lupine was such a tidy-minded man."
"Yes, sir."
The patrician steepled his hands and looked at Vimes over the top of them.
"Let me give you some advice, Captain," he said.
"Yes, sir."
"It may help you to make some sense of the world."
"Sir?"
"I believe you find life such a problem because you think there are the good people and the bad people," said the man. "You're wrong, of course. There are always and only the bad people, but some of them are on opposite sides."
He waved a thin hand towards the city and walked over to the window.
"A great rolling sea of evil," he said.
Almost proprietorially. Shallower in some places, of course, but deeper, oh, so much deeper in others. But people like you put together little rafts of rules and vaguely good intentions and say, this is the opposite, this will triumph in the end. Amazing. He slapped Vimes good-naturedly on the back. Down there, he said, are people who will follow any dragon, worship any god, ignore any iniquity. All out of a kind of humdrum, everyday badness. Not the really high creative loathsomeness of the great sinners, but a sort of mass-produced darkness of the soul. Sin, you might say, without a trace of originality. They accept evil, not because they say yes, but because they don't say no. I'm sorry if this offends you, he added, patting the captain's shoulder, but you fellows really need us. Yes, sir, said Vimes quietly. Oh, yes. We're the only ones who know how to make things work. You see, the only thing the good people are good at is overthrowing the bad people. And you're good at that, I'll grant you, but the trouble is that it's the only thing you're good at. One day it's the ringing of the bells, and the casting down of the evil tyrant, and the next it's everyone sitting around complaining that ever since the tyrant was overthrown no one's been taking out the trash. Because the bad people know how to plan. It's part of the specification, you might say. Every evil tyrant has a plan to rule the world. The good people don't seem to have the knack. Maybe, but you're wrong about the rest, said Vimes. It's just because people are afraid and alone. He paused. It sounded pretty hollow, even to him. He shrugged. They're just people, he said. They're just doing what people do, sir. Lord Vetinari gave him a friendly smile. Of course, he said. You have to believe that, I appreciate. Otherwise you'd go quite mad. Otherwise you'd think you're standing on a feather-thin bridge over the vaults of hell. Otherwise existence would be a dark agony, and the only hope would be that there is no life after death. I quite understand. He looked at his desk and sighed. And now, he said, there is such a lot to do. I'm afraid poor once was a good servant, but an inefficient master. So you may go. Have a good night's sleep. Oh, and do bring your men in tomorrow. The city must show its gratitude. It must what? Said Vimes. The patrician looked at a scroll. Already his voice was back to the distant tones of one who organizes and plans and controls. It's gratitude, he said. After every triumphant victory there must be heroes. It is essential. Then everyone will know that everything has been done properly. He glanced at Vimes over the top of the scroll. It's all part of the natural order of things, he said. After a while he made a few pencil annotations to the paper in front of him and looked up. I said, he said, that you may go. Vimes paused at the door. Do you believe all that, sir? He said. About the endless evil and the sheer blackness? Indeed, indeed, said the patrician, turning over the page. It is the only logical conclusion. But you get out of bed every morning, sir. Hmm? Yes? What is your point? I'd just like to know why, sir. Oh, do go away, Vimes, there's a good fellow.